This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hello and welcome to the Total Saints podcast, our weekly get-together discussing all things Southampton Football Club. We're live streaming our podcast on Facebook, Twitter, Twitch and YouTube. If you're watching on YouTube, make sure that you subscribe to the channel to be the first to see our latest videos. Now, as always, a massive thank you to our TSP patrons who support all the work that we can do. You can visit patreon.com/Total Saints podcast to find out more about getting involved. Coming up this week on the pod, the search for a new manager looks to be nearing its conclusion, but is Russell Martin the man to lead us back to the Premier League? We're going to get into that first. It was the most played fixture in the division without a home victory, so we all knew what was going to happen today against Brighton. Of course, we'll discuss that game. And our final top flight match for a while is Liverpool at St Mary's. We will preview that game. My name's Martin Stark, and I'm joined this week by Steve Grant, the owner of Saints Web, Glenn Delacour, the writer of the blog League One Minus 10, and Jacob Tanswell is the Southampton writer at The Athletic. Underpinned by our TSP patrons, this is episode 234 of the Total Saints podcast.
Your home for everything Southampton FC, from dedicated Saints insight to exclusive interviews. Live on YouTube every Sunday and available to download wherever you listen to your podcasts. This is the Total Saints podcast.
So reports this week then would suggest that Swansea City head coach Russell Martin is very close to being named the new Southampton manager. He led Swansea to 15th in his first season as a Championship manager, 10th this year, a campaign which ended with a 9-game unbeaten run. Swansea play possession-based football, and his commitment to that style is believed to be what appealed to the bosses at Southampton. So Jacob, you've been writing about it this week. What is the very latest as you understand it? Because it's moved on fairly quickly since we talked about it last Sunday.
Yeah, it has. I think it was TalkSport who reported first of the interest along with a few other candidates. And then since then, I think a few, you know, one or two maybe have dropped out of the race, and it's become clear probably since Wednesday maybe that Russell Martin was going to be the guy. He was scheduled to fly out to the US at some point last week to have whole face-to-face talks with the owners, because there was a little bit of a discord between them. But that never happened. Russell Martin stayed in Swansea, stayed in England throughout the week, and it looks like, obviously, with Southampton interested, that it will be done within the next couple of days. Obviously, Southampton want to move possession-based. You know, we've said it for a couple of weeks now that they're trying to move away completely from the harsh-nettle, high-pressing style where everything revolved around what you did without the ball, to basically being the equivalent of Brighton in the Championship, dominating, trying to drag opposition teams in before playing around them. And Russell Martin, he's possession-dominant, he's young, he's up-and-coming, and also, most importantly, he's probably going to be a head coach type that will work under Jason Wilcox within those guidelines. So Ankerson and Wilcox played a big role in this appointment. And yeah, all Southampton need to do now is make the approach to Swansea, pay the compensation and rubber stamp it.
Glenn, what's your feeling? I mean, underwhelmed is the general kind of feel at the moment. Were we expecting maybe a bigger name, or are we not in that position at the moment? Is it a case of this is where we are right now?
I would have been would be slightly disappointed if we didn't sound out some of the available bigger names, but I guess we probably haven't, because that doesn't seem to be the route that Rasmus Engström wants to go down. So it doesn't really surprise me that we've gone for another young-ish manager from basically from the Championship. I'm kind of cautiously optimistic about it. I don't think you can be over-optimistic about it, and I don't think you should, you know, chuck the baby out with the bathwater either. It seems... Yeah, okay. Maybe that is the definition of underwhelming. I don't know. Yeah. You know, the fact that he plays football and we recognise that we want to, you know, keep the ball and be a bit more possession heavy, I think that's a good thing. The only thing that worries me slightly is if it's another manager who's completely wedded to one style of football. You've got to know when to boot the ball 70 yards into the stand at times. So it does worry me a little bit if he's just another guy that has one way of playing, a bit like Ralph Hasnettle did. And eventually teams work it out. And then you've got a slight problem. But it does worry me again that we've done the metrics thing again. You know, we want to be possession based, and Rasmus has gone, oh, there's a metric for that. We need to find the manager who's got the best of that particular metric. So We'll see what happens there. I mean, I thought we were trying it out today in the first half, because we tried about 30 passes across our own goal before we gave the ball away 5 yards out.
Is that when the Olays started? There were some Olays, but no.
Yeah. Russell Martin football there. And we started it early, gave the ball away 6 yards out, and luckily they hit the post. So yeah, I'm okay with it, I guess. But, you know, proof is in the pudding, isn't it? We'll see what happens.
What are your thoughts, Steve? Because it does seem like it's another data-led decision to me.
It is, but at least this one seems to make a vague bit of sense. I mean, I don't think you'll find anybody who will really understand what metric it was that led Rasmus Engström to decide that Nathan Jones was the answer to all our prayers. But I think Russell Martin, I think, ticks a lot of boxes in many ways. Firstly, he'll probably be quite cheap. He's not going to be... Because he's not kind of done anything yet, he's not in a position to go to his superiors and tell them they don't know what they're talking about, even though Rasmus Engström clearly needs that kind of conversation to be had with him at some point. But his record in his relatively young managerial career is decent so far. He got MK Dons with a mid-table budget, got them to third, and they were a point off the automatics a couple of years ago, behind serial sort of yo-yoers Wigan and Rotherham. So he got them into a good position, went and took the Swansea job. And I mean, despite the fact they've barely got a pot to these days, Swansea, from what I gather, they're quite decent to watch for the most part. They're attacking. I think they're the fifth leading scorers in the Championship this season. The only downside is the defence that they've had. They've been quite a leaky defence, with a lot of those goals apparently coming from trying to play out from the back a little bit too much. So I do wonder whether the sort of nervous energy that tends to emanate from the stand at St Mary's whenever any home team dares to try and play the ball out of the back, whether that will have a negative impact. But I guess we'll wait until August to find that one out. But I think he's done what appears to be a passable job at Swansea, given the restrictions. They've, as I say, they've got no money, and they were kind of on, I mean, they finished, what, 3 points off the playoffs? I know they weren't ever really in contention, but they've still went and caught a lot of those sides, finished above Watford and Norwich, who everyone expected to be one and two this season. So yeah, he's done okay. And I think, given that, I think we all probably secretly accepted that we weren't going to be going in the Championship, we weren't going to be going for a big name or someone who was likely to be sort of really sort of exciting from the word go.
Do you think we should have done, though? Do you think that, as Glenn was saying, that we should have sounded out a few more of these people just for give them the chance to say no?
I mean, maybe we did. I mean, by all accounts, we've spoken to Graham Potter at some point in the last two or three months since he left Chelsea, and seemingly the answer from that conversation was that, yes, I'm absolutely interested if you stay up. So, I mean, that's kind of the kind of barrier we've had, is that anybody who was any good probably would have wanted to take over us as a Premier League side, less interested in the Championship, where maybe there's a slightly different skill set of the players required.
Yeah, I mean both Potter and like Brendan Rodgers, they're going to think themselves that they'll be up for another Premier League job.
Yeah.
at this time,
having done the Championship and been promoted.
Yeah, I mean,
Rodgers won the FA Cup 2 years ago. I think he's I think he's one of those sort of guys who's probably within his rights to think that to an extent. Although, I mean, obviously his shtick, isn't it, that he gets about two and a half years out of players and then it all goes horribly wrong very, very quickly. And Leicester probably should have binned it off when the first signs of trouble were coming. But him and Potter, I would fully expect to be managing Premier League sides next season.
I've been really impressed, Jacob, that they've got the business done already. You know, the season hasn't finished yet. We all said how short this window was, how quick the turnaround, how much work they've got to do. Is this the Jason Wilcox influence that's going on where he hasn't actually started yet, but he's having a bit of a say and he's getting his ducks in line?
Yeah, definitely. I think he's been having a say in terms of the academy, how it's going to set up next year, what coaches will be in what age groups, having a say, obviously, in the style of play, whoever the manager is. But also, I think it speaks more broadly of replacing people that are leaving, all this staff that are leaving. I think they're doing that first. So, you know, they're bringing in Mowbray from Aberdeen as the new head of recruitment, eventually replacing Joe Shields, who left October, guarding Leaf until February. And they're close to, from what I believe, appointed a new academy director as well. So these are all things that they're doing slowly or quickly. And they're getting these people in place in order to make the key decisions when the end of summer, end of the season comes, and they can therefore look forward to recruiting properly in the squad, because it's going to be a massive task. You saw today that a lot of these players aren't built for possession-based football. They can't play out from the back. They can't play through the lines. That's from the centre-backs, that's from centre midfield, bar Lavia, but he'll be off. And the forwards as well. It's going to be a complete heel turn, really, isn't it? And
we didn't have any forwards today.
Theo Walcott.
I was just trying to think what style that the players, the 11 players, are designed for. The ones that but that's
the thing. Someone asked Seller today.
Rondos.
Someone asked Seller today, what have you learned in your time? And he looked at me and said, those that have been watching from the start know my identity.
And you're like,
no, I don't mind. I think Sellers is a good coach. I think he has been left hung up to dry by Sport Republic at times. I think the fact that he doesn't know anything about this appointment and he's been told or briefed by the club media and by reading the press, although he says he doesn't, is, I don't think, it's right. I think he should have had a bit more transparency. But yeah, it's going to be a huge change of direction for Slampton in the summer. And a lot of these players either have to get used to it or have to leave.
Has it been a bit disrespectful, Steve, do you think, to Sellers? I mean, he's saying he's absolutely not going to stay at Saints if he wasn't the manager. So he's made that pretty clear this week. I don't think they would ever consider keeping him on as a coach anyway. But do you think it's been handled badly, or is that just the nature of these jobs where they say you're in charge to the end of the season?
Yeah, I mean, I think there is a kind of natural sort of, this is just the way football works. It's cutthroat business. And you're only ever one game away from potentially being out on your ear. But I mean, Sellers isn't stupid. He's not that naive to think that the performances and results that we've seen in his tenure have been remotely good enough for him to be confident to stay in position. So of course we're gonna be looking for sort of a succession plan. And yeah, absolutely, I wouldn't expect him to stick around when a replacement is found, because yeah, I mean, once you've kind of tasted that top job, you can't then just go back into the pack. I think from a sort of environment perspective, that just doesn't work. But again, I mean, you've seen today in Tino's post-match interview on the club, with the club's social media, he's referenced the manager by name again, and there's clearly not a sort of player manager relationship there. It's a player coaching staff relationship, and I think that's ultimately where Sellers has failed to kind of bridge that difference and make it kind of known that okay, lads, I was your mate before up until February, but now the environment has changed, you answer to me, you are subordinate to me, and therefore you don't call me by my first name, it's gaffer, boss, whatever. And yeah, that sort of thing. I mean, it's a silly thing to moan about, obviously, but it paints a picture of kind of a, just a, a general lack of discipline. And I think we've seen sort of disjointed performances, disjointed team selections. I mean, what the hell was that today?
Yeah.
And
I think what you've said there's partly explained it, you know, trying to be Mr. Nice Guy. Maybe he's just trying to, you know, spread the start and give everybody a game. I mean, where do nice guys finish?
But I did that run the Sunday league side. It's a little bit different when you're trying to persuade a bunch of fat lads to get out of bed on a Sunday morning than it is when you're paying them 50 grand a week. I mean, it's professional sport. You're supposed to be the best of the best and have this sort of absolute winning attitude. And I mean, looking through that team, we haven't got anybody with that.
Have we been, Glenn, have we had our fingers burned with Nathan Jones? Are we overanalyzing this a bit too much? Because obviously that didn't work out. Arguably, you know, had we done that in the summer, had we brought in the players that he wanted, the coaches that he wanted, and given him the season, it might have worked out at a push. Are we slightly tainted by what happened and what went wrong there? Is it going to take us a while to get over that? Because to me, it feels like the pressure is going to be on Russell Martin coming in to hit the ground running, or we're going to start making those comparisons again.
I think you have to draw a line under what's happened this season. Next year, we're going to be a different team, a different manager, different division. Ultimately, I think it's not very rewarding to look back at the Nathan Jones appointment. I think that's got to be consigned to the dustbin of history.
It's like the Ted Bates statue. It will always be there. Everyone will always remember.
It will reflect badly on the owners again if it doesn't work out. But it should be easier for it to work. I mean, Nathan Jones might have worked in the Championship, but I don't think there's any way on this planet that he is ever going to be a successful Premier League manager with anybody, let alone with the shambles of a squad and the recruitment that we had this season. So the pressure will be on Russell Martin simply because we are going to be a big fish in the Championship next year with regards to the budget that we've got, because of the parachute payments, because of the owners that we've got, who are obviously not short of a bob or two. So the pressure is going to be on more so than it ever was at Swansea, because there was always a mitigating factor at Swansea, something he could blame if something went wrong. Well, my owners aren't giving me any money. What do you expect? I'm having to make do with free transfers and all this sort of stuff. So there'll be enough pressure on Russell Martin anyway, if it does turn out to be him. But no, I want to forget all about Nathan Jones, to be honest, and I'm sure that Rasmus Angerson and the Sport Republic do as well. And we just need to go from now. You know, there's so much change going on, as Jacob said, with not only, you know, obviously changing the division, but that so much is changing behind the scenes. You know, it was one of Nigel Atkins' favourite quotes, wasn't it? Draw a line under it and move on, and that's kind of what we have to do once this godforsaken season is over.
It's a lack of trust, isn't it? That's the problem. That while Sport Republic had our absolute trust up until probably June, July, maybe, based on the fact that we looked as if we were addressing key areas, and obviously there were links to massive money by our standards, centre forwards who, let's be honest, if we'd signed Cody Gakpo, we wouldn't be sat here having this conversation. We'd be 12th in the league and not giving a damn about the relegation battle. But ultimately, they've made two bad appointments in a row, and they were two bad appointments that I think a lot of people could probably have predicted were going to be bad. Mm. So there's already an erosion of trust there. I mean, yeah, you can come kind of stand back and say, fine, it's your money, lads, do as you please, but it's our football club. It's not just any old business. We are all heavily invested in this, whether we like it or not, mostly not at the moment, quite frankly. And as a result, I mean Rasmus in particular, because everyone knows it was his appointment for Jones, and that has been seen as kind of the catalyst of everything, really. He's got to regain that trust. And I mean, it's not just making a quick appointment and making sure that all the backroom appointments are in place and that some sort of vague fluidity amongst the kind of suits in the club is already starting in the summer. There's got to be kind of signs that they know what they're doing from a playing squad perspective. We all appreciate that certain players aren't going to be playing for us next season, whether we like it or not. But can they extract the maximum value out of the players that we would like to keep? can we basically just put certain players into a dustbin and cart them off where they can never be seen again? Joe Aribo. Okay, can they get all this stuff organized in a summer that is, I mean, we've got basically 3 weeks less than all the other championship sides to start getting prepared for all of this stuff, because we're still playing. They finished 2 weeks ago. So there's a lot to be done and not very much time to do it, and a lot of trust to be regained in a very short space of time.
And do you think, Jacob, this is someone that they've been tracking for a while? Because obviously Nathan Jones, we know that Rasmus Ankersen have been tracking him for a while. There are a lot of names that have come around. Michael Carrick is one that I can see being mentioned tonight again in the comments. You know, Frank Lampard's name comes up whenever there's a vacancy somewhere. So
God, please.
Okay, no. We can write Frank Lampard off. That's not
bring Nathan Jones back ahead of Frank Lampard, seriously.
How close do you think his name was to the top of that list?
I think it's been close to the top of the list. I think probably the top three, maybe, if I'm guessing for this appointment. But I don't think he probably wasn't in a database of managers that Southampton always claim they have. Because if you look at the previous managers that have been in a database, Bruno Lage, Thomas Frank, De Zerbi. Okay, De Zerbi's similar to Russell Martin, but the other two are basically played as a better version of Nathan Jones and Ralph Hasenhüttl, which is the high pressing, quite direct style of play. So for me, it's almost like Sport Republic's third attempt of a reset. They tried it last summer in freshen up Hasenhüttl and his backroom staff and the players there. Then they tried to go even more direct with Jones, with Onuachu and Bree coming in and playing a back three, five, whatever. And now they're saying, right, we tried that. Let's go to possession now. Who's in the championship or who shows up well on the data that's really possession heavy? We're going to go completely the other end of the spectrum, completely extreme. And we're going to see if Russell Martin can do it. And I don't think it's probably something that's been planned long term, like this strategy that's been going on for 6 months. He probably just sat down with Jason Walcott. He looked at Man City, as they tend to do quite a lot. And they said, what actually works? Oh, okay. We're going to play three times a week, Saturday, Tuesday, Saturday. We can't keep pressing like this. It's not sustainable. And if we do go back up, we can't keep offering this energy output all the time. Teams have realised how to work against Southampton, how to beat the press. If the morale's not there, if the energies are not there, Southampton will get played through anyway. So they need to find a way of just taking the temperature out of games. And if anyone's not watched the Russell Martin coach's voice, where he spends 28 minutes analysing the 4-0 win against Cardiff, I recommend you to watch it straight after this, because it was incredible in terms of what he wants his team to have all the time, regardless of formation. And if you see what he says there, it's very similar to what Jason Walcott's Man City want, and therefore what Sport Republic want too.
That's a really good point about the increased number of games next season too. Glenn, we're kind of like scrabbling around trying to find out as much as we possibly can. You know, is it a friend or somebody, a relative that's a Swansea fan? We're clutching at straws a bit here, but
my sister has the misfortune of being married to a Welshman who supports Swansea. And he's a very sensible chap. And all he said to me is that he always felt that Russell Martin would do a really good job for someone with a decent budget and some decent players. And he said he's basically been hamstrung at Swansea by a lack of budget, some slightly strange owners that they've got there. And that's the only sort of feedback I've got on him. I mean, I'll freely admit, because we have been not in the championship for a long, long time, I don't know too much about it now. I assume it's kind of similar to what it was when we were last in it, in that, you know, a lot of the teams are a lot more direct. There's not as much diving around. There's no VAR, thank Christ. And you know, so I'm looking forward to learning what it's all about. But all I've heard about, you know, Russell Martin is that, you know, is those things that we've all spoken about. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see how he deals with the step up. So even though it's in the same division that he's used to, it is a step up in terms of the level of expectations that are going to be on him.
Well, we always say get in touch with us during the week. Charlie's a Patreon, and he says his cousin is Russell Martin's goalkeeping coach. So you're like, again, this is like kind of like clutching at what can we possibly find out about this guy?
Don't need a journalist. Just
get Charlie on. But he said, actually chatting to him, you know, his philosophy and his ideas and stuff. He said, to be honest, when he spoke to him a year or so ago, he said, I wouldn't have a problem with him managing Saints one day. And he also went on to say some bits about how they're kind of aware that they're coming in and our expectations are going to be a little bit low, we're going to be a bit underwhelmed, and they know that they're going to be trying to get everybody back on side. So he said, above all, hopefully it'll be the season when we get a clear playing style back and a team that we can actually be proud of. And I think I kind of echo Charlie's sentiments to that last sentence and say that's probably all we really want from next season. That'll go a long way. Jacob, just on the other appointment, I know you mentioned it, but Darren Mowbray coming in, is this going to help with the accountability? It looks like you've got obviously Rasmus now and then Jason Wilcox, Darren Mowbray coming in as well, and then the manager. It looks like there's that the chain of command there, and they're going to be accountable for some of the decisions and the recruitment.
Yeah, I think there's becoming a bit of a more of a power structure now in terms of Ankerson's going to probably take a step back a little bit more. Wilcox will be in charge of the day-to-day football operations, and then Darren Mowbray will be going out ahead of recruitment, rubber stamping signing. So we won't end up in a situation of January where the back end of it was, does anyone know what's going on? Who are we signing? And then it's like, oh, Ankerson's out in Denmark or whatever, trying to do this deal, that deal, with not really knowing. So I think Darren Mowbray, he'll be in charge of the scouting system. He'll be the one they all answer to. It's been going on for a few weeks. I know Slampton have looked at other people from other clubs in England and elsewhere. But Darren Mowbray is one that's, I think it's been agreed for a few weeks now. So that's good just to get him through the door. I have a bit of clarity in that situation, because I found it a bit odd that they never just even tried to get head of recruitment in ahead of January. Like, as soon as Joe Shields was off in October, they said, right, we'll do it ourselves. And with Ankerson and obviously the power struggle in the hierarchy, it was always going to be difficult for that to be smooth sailing as well.
Well, if he sticks around for a year, that'd be a start.
I don't know if anyone knows, how old is Darren Mowbray? Because usually the people we're appointing for these sort of positions are kind of, you know, 30.
Yeah, he's a little bit older. It's Tony Mowbray's brother. So I think he's around in his mid-50s, I think. He's a little bit more experienced in that Martin Glover mould. So potentially he could be a little bit more wiser and not necessarily go on whims.
I'm just still upset that the new Saints manager is younger than me. Like, you get to that age in life, it's like, oh.
Get used to it, mate.
Glenn was hoping for Roy Hodgson.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
There was a game as well today. The final away game of a sorry season ended in defeat. 3-1, the final score. I mean, you guys were all there today. Steve, you made the trip. What were your thoughts today?
Rubbish lineup and first half performance largely to match. I think we had a 2 or 3 minute spell fairly early on where basically both sides missed. Just traded in missing sitters, where we won the ball quite high up the pitch, and Walcott feeds Alcaraz, who basically just gets his feet in a tangle and shanks one wide. When he's been in that position quite a lot actually since he joined, and more often than not, it's ended up in the bottom corner. That was frustrating. But other than that, I mean, Brighton gave us an absolute lesson in that first half, an absolute schooling. And we were very fortunate to only be two down, and it was just garbage. There was no energy to it, which I think we probably expected when we saw the lineup. I mean, to be honest, that was one of Elianusi's better performances this season, I thought, which is potentially quite a low bar. But no, I mean he was okay. I thought Aribo was. I mean, you might as well have stuck a training cone out there. I mean, the thing that kind of summed everything up for me in that game was when we won the ball high up and we sort of launched a counter-attack. The ball goes to Joe Aribo, and two passes later, the ball is back with Alex McCarthy. And it's like, how the hell have we just done that? Okay, fine. If we're playing the game out at 2-0 up, you're wasting time and not concerned about going forward too much. But we were 1-0 down at the time. maybe even 2-0. I can't quite remember when it was. But it was just extraordinary moment. And yeah, as I say, just something that kind of summed everything up, along with the inflatable turd that was in the that was in the away.
Is that you?
Did you say that? It was not. No. I took the photo that's doing the rounds, but no, I'm absolving myself of any responsibility for that.
I did share the photo. It made me laugh. Glenn, that's the fourth away game in a row we've conceded 3 goals. We're not really learning much about the team, are we? These last 2 games.
Consistent. It's all about consistency. Yeah, it was. I mean, I was there with Steve. It was awful. We played well for about 15 minutes in the second half when we genuinely got on the front foot. That phrase that Ruben Sellers totally misuses. And we actually got forward, and Brighton suddenly looked rattled.
It was odd. I do wonder whether we just lulled them into a false sense of security that they genuinely just thought, well, these lads aren't bothering, so we can just stroll our way through it. And all of a sudden, we just decided, oh yeah, we fancy running around a little bit here.
Yeah. So we scored the goal from the set piece, which was decent, and then you know we scored the second goal, and I've watched it since, and it level has been written out of the offside law now, hasn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, that I can't be bothered with dealing with the millimetres, and I know people are going to argue, yes, it's a black and white, it's a yes or no, but that's absurd. That should be a goal. And it reminded me back when, do you remember the game we lost 9-0 against Man United when Che Adams had one disallowed for absolutely nothing? And they couldn't put a picture on the screen that showed it was offside, or it, you know. And then we had the Danny Ings one against Villa with his armpit hair got given offside. I mean, and those 2 goals were 2.5 years ago, I think. And here we are today. I mean, the reason we've not been moaning much about VAR this season as Saints fans is because we ain't been doing any attacking. Mm. So
yeah, plenty of other podcasts and other fan groups have been doing that on our behalf.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. But you know, I mean, when that goal got disallowed, it wasn't surprising. Because it's just the way this season has gone, isn't it? But it just that seemed to deflate us a little bit. And then Paul Tierney, who's a shocking referee, he then pulled, I think the ball was at someone's feet, roughly on the penalty spot, and he pulled it back for a foul, sort of 15 yards back against, you know, one of our players, gave us a free kick miles out. And it's just those sort of things just seem to deflate the team. And then suddenly we went back to being passive again, and Brighton scored a 3rd goal thanks to a wonderful bit of closing down by Aribo and another quality bit of goalkeeping by McCarthy. So who did in fact keep the score down a little bit after that? He made a couple of decent saves, to be fair to him, but it was just another sort of nothing. You can't play well for 15 minutes, but it's interesting that, you know, the 15 minutes where we played well was where we genuinely got the ball down and tried to play with a little bit of pace. And when we do that, we don't look that bad, but we only seem to do it for 15 minutes. And the rest of the time, we're worrying about rest defence. You know,
your play stoppers.
It's just, yeah, your play stoppers. And it was just dreadful, but it was exactly as you kind of expected it to be. And I think at the final whistle, everyone went, oh, well, same again.
Yeah. I think you summed it up, Jacob. It was kind of a limbo game, isn't it? It was always going to be a bit strange because the manager knows he's going. Some of the players know that they're off. There's no motivation really for any of them.
No, that's why I was just so glad that there were some youngsters in Tino Livramento there, because I thought, oh my God, this could be a little bit boring, because I would just see Lewis Dunk keeping the ball for about 60 minutes, waiting for someone to come and press him, and then they'll rip through him and Brighton will score, and then they'll probably just keep the ball and Slams would just be quite passive. And fortunately, I had the best seat in the house, so I could just see Camidor and Don Ballon and Livramento all come on. And I thought, you know, Livramento was the one I was really looking forward to seeing, and I thought he looked really good, to be honest with you. His first action, he came in, snapped in Matoma, won a free kick. That shows, obviously, the mental scars are not there. And then even when he was under pressure, when Jan Benrick would just give him the ball when 3 players were around him, he'd still work a way out of it. And I think, considering the last 20 minutes was pretty passive, to be honest with you, they're just going through the motions, looking up. And I think when the fourth official added 7 minutes of added time, I think they thought, oh my bloody hell, just get on with it. But yeah, Livramento I thought was quite good. Camidor had some nice touches. Don Mala tried to run in behind a few times, and I laughed because I'm thinking, you're not getting in the red zone, you're not the number 10 that you're supposed to be. But I quite like that as well. It's quite refreshing. So at least there's a few glimmers of hope for next season, because I think if Camindor and Dumbala didn't play today or aren't in the squad next week, then they could be off because they won't sign a new contract. So I think that this will hopefully be the start of a more productive look into the future.
Were you surprised they didn't start, Glenn? I mean, I don't want to spend another 5 minutes going on about Elianusi and Walcott, but, you know, Adam Armstrong said this week that he was happy to stick around next season and gets dropped from the squad. I honestly don't want to spend 5 minutes talking about awful starting 11s, because I feel like we've done that for the last 3 or 4 or 5 months. But is it a bit weird that they didn't come in a bit earlier? Because he was making the noises about it during the week.
No, I don't think so. And, you know, I said a couple of weeks ago, it's a massive jump up from what is basically age group football in the B team up to playing a professional game. I mean, you saw there was one bit where Don Ballard ran into Lewis Dunk and it was like swatting a fly. You know, it's so different. And you know, Cammy Doyle, I don't know sort of how tall he is and stuff, but he looked kind of small and slight out on the pitch. It is a big step up. I think they could have given him a bit longer. Especially Doyle. I think Ballard got about 25 minutes, did he? Doyle got about 10 at the end. They could have given him a little bit longer, I think. It's especially, you know, bearing in mind our forwards are not all that, are they? So you wouldn't exactly be missing much. But I'm not surprised they didn't start. But I would have liked to have seen them come on a little bit earlier. But, you know, again, the mind-blowing selection was Joe Aribo coming in from absolutely nowhere and being Joe Aribo. No, Glenn, no, I'm surprised.
He's the reason why he plays, because he's been good in training as well.
Oh, excellent.
Excellent. I thought I'd tell you that.
Thanks. Cheers,
honestly,
mate.
Russell Martin just needs to listen back to a few of these podcasts and write down some of the phrases not to mention in interviews and the triggers that are going to set everybody off. Steve, I just want to talk about Livramento, because I know they made a big deal about him being back after 13 months. And I know you were a little bit skeptical perhaps about the reasons behind that, and maybe it was a bit too soon.
Yeah, I mean, I just thought, given that the kid's been out for the best part of 18 months, has had what, 3 different operations now, I think, and has tried to come back, played that 45 minutes for the B team, what, about a month or so ago now? That feels like a lifetime ago. And then the talk was that, right, okay, he was feeling some discomfort in the days afterwards, so therefore, right, season over, just draw a line under it and we'll get you ready to be sort of raring to go in July. So to me, it kind of felt like it was a bit of a sort of PR, good PR sort of push to say, look, this kid that we've all pinned our hopes on is fit and available again. And we'll give him some game time, which I just felt was just a bit of a risk, because what are you doing in that situation? You're either demonstrating to potential suitors that, oh, look, he's fit. They've given him minutes in the Premier League game, so he must be fine. Or you're basically setting him up to get injured again. When he's not played a competitive game against adults. There's been nothing really that's been said as to why 3 weeks ago his season was over and they weren't looking to push him through anything, and now all of a sudden it's, oh, he's gonna be on the bench at Brighton and he'll probably play. I mean, he played well, as Glenn said. He did look, certainly when he was on the ball, he did look as if he'd never really been away, which is obviously very promising. But I don't know, it just feels to me that we owe the kid a duty of care, and the same applies to all the players. When they've been through what Tino's been through, there is a duty of care to that player to not rush them back for the sake of a PR win. And I just thought that was a little bit irresponsible.
I suppose there were no pictures of them training this week that they could share on social media without a backlash. So maybe they were looking for a different story. And the fact that he got that injury at Brighton, it makes it all nice and joined up, and it ticks all the boxes maybe. So it would just serve ourselves right, wouldn't it, if he's the first one out the door. We'll see. Final Premier League game for a while is Liverpool on Sunday. I mean, the season finally comes to an end. Glenn, the reverse fixture ended 3-1 back in November. Nathan Jones's first game in charge.
But it wasn't his first game.
Because he didn't take credit.
He absolved his responsibility
from that. Right. Not in the win ratio. That one.
What are you expecting on Sunday? It's going to be another one of those really strange games where, you know,
not a lot. Yeah. I'm Ruben Sellers to wave goodbye. with respect or without. I don't really care. What do I expect from the game itself? It doesn't look like Liverpool are going to be playing for anything, unless Manchester United managed to lose twice at home, and or Newcastle managed to lose twice in the last two games. So it looks like Liverpool are just going to be settling for the Europa League place. But regardless of whether they've got anything to play for or not, they're going to be far too strong for us. And they'll be far too slick with the way they play for us to have an answer to. So hopefully you'd like to think that we'd go into it and try and give the fans a decent send-off for the season, but there's nothing to suggest that we'll do that whatsoever. So, we've been waiting for that for the last 10 games. Go on, have a go. But no, we don't do that.
Put the brakes off.
I think it's same as today, really. The way we can get something out of it is by giving the youngsters some more minutes. And, maybe look at, again, said this last week, look at the players who are going to be here next year. But it is a strange one. I mean, in Ruben Selle's defence, it is a strange one. He knows he's going. So what's his motivation going to be? He's not really going to be concerned about the future of Southampton Football Club. So who knows? Just getting 11 players out on the pitch who actually want to be there and are going to put in some sort of effort. Because you're playing against a very good team. So if Liverpool were up for it, they could score however many they wanted to if we're not at it. But even if they're not up for it, they'll just pass the ball around and it'll just be really, really boring. So standard 2-0 defeat and rubbish. So hopefully we have a go. But I think if you've just got to go there as a fan, if you're going, and just try and enjoy it and hopefully get something out of it with the with watching the youngsters have a few minutes.
What are you expecting, Steve? Is it going to be like today but worse?
No, I think it'll be like today but slightly less painful, because I think Liverpool aren't, I mean, as mental as it feels to actually say this, I actually don't think Liverpool are on Brighton's level at the moment, despite what the league table might suggest.
Well, Brighton are given a few hidings out, haven't they?
Yeah, including to Liverpool earlier in the season. So yeah, I mean, Brighton are a very, very good side, and they're kind of at the peak of, they're probably headbutting their glass ceiling right now. Liverpool are going through a bit of an iffy patch. There's probably going to be an awful lot of change in the summer. So actually, they're the team that Jurgen Klopp names Sunday. I wouldn't be surprised if it's got a case of playing all the old hits about it. Firmino's off, so I've no doubt he'll start and probably score a hat trick. and I mean, you look at their midfield, like constant talk of needing to refresh that midfield. So James Milner probably playing some part before he then goes to Brighton. So yeah, I think it's going to be one of those sort of disjointed end of season games where ultimately there's nothing much riding on it, but realistically the quality will probably tell in the end.
That's a really good point, Jacob, from Saint 194. Do you think Russell Martin would be in the stadium for the game?
Yeah, I was going to say that. Maybe. I thought you could have that example of Erik ten Hag last year when he was at the Crystal Palace game and overseeing Ralph Rangnick's final game, which ended in defeat. So you could have that. You could see Russell Martin in a director's box with, who knows, Ankerson might even go to a game under Sellers. but yeah, I'm looking forward to it purely for the fact that I've been told that my piece next week will be basically to interview fans in the pub beforehand. So I'm looking forward to, yeah, if anyone's in...
What pub are you going to be in? What pub?
I'm going to be in from the morning, I don't know, anywhere. So if anyone wants to have a chat, to have an interview, tell me about the season, let me know. You can buy me a pint if you want. And then we'll just...
is there not an expenses budget?
There's not a budget. Exactly.
They can buy me one if they want to. I don't mind. And then I'll rock over St Mary's about 2:30, and then yeah, let's see what happens. And I'm looking forward to seeing what happens. I'm not looking forward to it, but I'm interested to see what happens after the game in terms of if they do a lap of honour and how many people will actually be there. So
will you stay for the lap of honour, Glenn, Steve? Are you going to be
No,
I didn't.
Probably not. I mean, I stayed for a bit of the one against Fulham just to see what the reaction was. And I mean, seeing half of the fan base clapping along like seals as if they put in a great shift was kind of like, nah, I'm not watching that crap again.
Mm. I would stay, but my dad will be 3 miles up the road by then. The second the whistle goes, he's like, I'm gone. See ya.
Do you think the game is just going to be a distraction this week, Jacob? Because it sounds like there might be some bigger news on Monday, Tuesday, if they get this announcement over the line and they get it done. It sounds like the game might just be a distraction.
I think everyone's been basically saying, you know, in the club, like, just get out the season over and done with. Let's just go on holiday. Let's just reset. Let the decision makers do what they've got to do and let the others just completely go. You know, I said a few weeks ago on here that I think the players were mentally done, and that's before quite a few weeks before relegation. And I think probably the staff, close to the first team and just in general around the club probably think the same as well. So I think if they could, they'd go without this game. At the end of the day, there's no pressure. Let's see what happens. And I would like to see, you know, a bit more, you know, some new blood added into that team and see what happens rather than playing the same old hits and getting the same old results.
Yeah. Was that a yawn, Glenn?
It's been a long day.
Just thought of the starting 11 already.
Final
time, I'm going to ask you for score predictions. So if you're watching along live, stick these in the comments. Steve, how many do you think Liverpool will get on Sunday?
3-1.
3-1. Glenn?
I was going to say the same thing actually, so I'll
you can.
I'll rev it up and go 3-0 Liverpool.
3-0 and Jacob,
I'm going back to type. I'm going to say 2-1 Southampton.
Nurse.
I mean, I'd love to see the odds you get on that. We shall see. So we'll keep an eye on your Twitter, shall we, and see which pub you're going to be in post-match.
I'll go to any, yeah. Just send me a message. I'll walk. I'll go anywhere.
There we go. I look forward to you on the pod next Sunday if we do it. On that note, thank you for everything. There was plenty to get through there. Don't forget you can follow Total Saints Podcast on Facebook and Twitter. It's at Total Saints Pod. The website is totalsaints.co.uk. And as I mentioned at the start, we're on Patreon, and that's where you can support the podcast with your monthly contributions. It's patreon.com/Total Saints Podcast. The four tiers on there range from £5 to £20 per month. Each of the tiers comes with its own perks, including some weekly shouts for those patrons in our Francis Benali and our Mick Shannon tiers. We always do these at the end of the pod. So thanks as always to Dave Melton, Mark Atkins, Matt Hall, Andy Hollis, and Andy Thompson in the Francis Benali tier, and also to Colt Baker, Dave Ernsberger, Ed Busy, Nick Higston, Phil Cook, Matt Rose, and Nick Reed in the Mick Shannon tier. Thank you, Glenn. Thanks, Steve. Thank you, Jacob. Thank you for watching. Thank you for listening. And we'll see you again next week.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.